Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Thanks for tuning into the show today. Let's get right to our topic, which is women and philanthropy. Joining me on the show is Wendy Steele, who can shed a lot of light about the subject. Wendy is the founder of Generosity Matters. She understands the impact of generosity and has been encouraging philanthropy for most of her adult life. In 2001, she launched and has led an innovative foundation called Impact 100, which brings transformational grants to the communities it serves. Wendy's here to share her journey and give advice on philanthropy. And it's just great to have you on the show, Wendy. Welcome.
Oh my gosh, Deirdre. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. And let's just start off by learning a little bit more about how you launched Impact 100. Perhaps you could tell us a bit of the backstory.
Absolutely. So in 2001, I had lived in Cincinnati, Ohio for, about 9 years and met a lot of fabulous women there. And along the way, I worked full time for a period. I was a stay-at-home mom for a period in this era and met a lot of fabulous women. And what I found is as I was very involved in the community in a number of ways, often I would reach out to my women friends and invite them to participate in whatever it was I was doing. And what I heard back was surprising and disappointing, but yet really legitimate. What I heard were all of the very real reasons these outstanding high-capacity women were not very involved in the community. It might be that they are stay-at-home moms and they didn't budget paying a babysitter $10 an hour to go out and volunteer with me. Or they might travel for their work and they can't make regular meetings. It might be that I was inviting them to get involved in something that might be health and human services related and they're really only passionate about arts and culture. And then, you know, sort of a more pervasive theme was this sense that I kept getting that, gosh, these women, they didn't feel as if they had enough to give. They weren't really sure what happened to their donations when they made them. And they were skeptical that, you know, the nonprofit industry was led by a bunch of CEOs making seven-figure salaries and flying along in corporate jets based on whatever the latest scandal might be. And in the summer of 2001, all of these things came together in my mind. And I thought there has to be a way to overcome the obstacles that are very real in the lives of the women I knew and create a giving experience that would allow the community to benefit from the gifts these women would bring, their hearts, their minds, and their checkbooks, and allow these women to experience what it's like to be a part of the solution and to work arm in arm with other women to make their own community a better place. And that's how it all began.
Yeah, that's so smart because you take skeptical right out of it when you involve people and have them a part of the process so that they can kind of buy in and see and feel and be a part of what's going on. So that's really awesome, Wendy. How did your company, Generosity Matters, kind of come to be along with Impact 100? Where do they intersect?
You know, they're closely related. It's important to note that everything we do with Impact 100, it's all led by volunteers, and it's structured to overcome each one of those objections that the woman expressed. Generosity Matters, however, is a result of me being asked time and time again from organizations outside of Impact 100 to help them to evolve, to help them build a culture of generosity. So in Generosity Matters, I work with smaller companies that might not have their own corporate social responsibility team, and they want to manage how they give back while still retaining some level of control on that process. I work with high net worth families as they navigate multi-generational wealth transfer and the ability to transfer their values along with those valuables. And then I work with nonprofits who might have a board or a staff that's feeling burned out or perhaps not comfortable asking for gifts of support of their organization. And I work with them to create new language and shift the paradigm around what it really means when we ask someone to give to the causes we care about.
Your work sounds fascinating. It really does.
It's always fun. There is no doubt about that. I feel extremely fortunate.
And it's meaningful, too. I mean, you're getting people to understand the importance of giving, whether it's a business, a nonprofit, or high net worth people. What do you think surprised you the most about the level of giving among some of the Impact 100 community members?
You know, I'm always so humbled and amazed as I get to meet the women who have joined the Impact 100 movement. You know, the most interesting thing, I think, is the diversity. If you were to look, so the membership obligation, if you will, is one woman, $1,000, one vote. And $1,000 is a lot of money. It's what we call a stop and think gift. Regardless of your financial wherewithal, you do think before you write a check for $1,000. And what I have found is the diversity of women, the both sacrificial nature of some of the women who join Impact 100, despite having to give up some more material pleasures on their own. They might not go out to dinner as often, or they might not get that, you know, $5 coffee so that they can set aside money to make their Impact 100 donation. Working alongside with women who have, you know, far more abundant resources, they could write a check to anywhere and to many places, and yet they have chosen to become a part of Impact 100 because of the power of this particular model in really moving the needle locally.
That's really interesting. So what do you, and I know that your foundation has experienced a lot of growth since you started. Maybe you can comment on the growth, but what do you think is behind this impressive growth?
Oh my gosh. You know, the growth has been far exceeding my expectations. So I think part of it over time is word of mouth. And as you get bigger, there are more women who've experienced Impact 100. And so they talk to their friends and their sisters and colleagues in other communities, and it starts to sort of grow organically. The reason, though, underlying all of that is it is a very simple model that is easy for people to understand, and it's 100% transparent. So you never have to wonder what's going on behind the curtain, so to speak. And women feel invested emotionally, personally, professionally in the work that happens. Bringing people together, building community, and working to problem solve collaboratively is just really powerful. We do have women who they might join in year one, and then something happens to their budget. You know, they might have a baby, or they might have to care for a sick relative, you know, all kinds of good and bad things that influence their budget. But when they can afford to, they come back. And to me, that's probably the most heartfelt testimony, is when people choose to come back after having to take a break for budget reasons. That to me is just humbling and amazing.
Absolutely. Wendy, is it the way that you have your model set up, is it that you are a part of this you know, advisory council for, let's say, a year. And then with that $1,000 donation, and then, like you said, if something happens in your life and you have to step back, are you renew it once a year, or what does that cycle look like?
That's a great question. So at every Impact 100 chapter, every single one has a member recruitment period. And what we call members is what most nonprofits would call donors. But in order to become a voting member of Impact 100, you need to make a $1,000 donation. 100% of that $1,000 gets pooled together with everyone else's donation. And it becomes a grant to that local community with a minimum grant amount of $100,000. It's meant to be transformational. When women do give that $1,000, that is their one-year commitment. If there's a woman who's wealthy enough to write a check for $5,000, she may do so, and we're very grateful. She can either buy 5 years of membership for herself, or she can buy her own membership and provide, you know, some sort of matching grant scholarships to help women who otherwise couldn't afford to become a member. And every year, all of our members are asked to re-up. All of our members are asked to rejoin, and their commitment the next year is $1,000. If you're doing the math, you're wondering how we cover any administrative expenses if we give away all of our member dollars. We do offer something called a 110% membership. So as women, we love to say that we give 110% to everything we do. Well, if we give 110% to Impact 100, that additional 10% or $100 gets also pooled together to cover any administrative burden that comes about. So we at Impact 100 are really good at bartering and getting in-kind donations and encouraging the corporate sponsors in our community to support the work that we're doing. But the extra 10% that 110% members give also helps us do things like pay for postage or things that we can't get given in kind. And that's how it works.
Excellent. And when you, it sounds different because I think most folks are used to writing a check. And of course, the skepticism comes when you don't know where the check is going or how it's being used. But it sounds like with your model, you can actually become a part of the process and the grant giving. Is that correct?
That is absolutely true. So one of the major features of the Impact 100 model is if you choose to become a member, you have a choice. You can get really involved, and there's all kinds of volunteer opportunities, or you can choose not to get involved, or perhaps your schedule doesn't allow it. And either way, it is a guilt-free experience. So if you cannot get involved, no worries. And if you can, then we'll put you to work. So the way that the cycle works is when we have a date certain that we cut off our membership. So I'm going to hypothetically say December 31st. And so everyone who wants to join for that coming up year will have their check-in by December 31st. About January 15th or 20th, we announce to the nonprofit community, hey, guess what? We have this many members. So one of the chapters that has just launched is Traverse City, Michigan. It's a very small town. Our defined region is 5 counties here in rural northern Michigan. And so we announced to the community our first-year members, which was record-breaking. We had 255 women join.
Amazing.
So that means that we have 2 grants to give away of $127,500. At that point, we invite all the nonprofits in our 5-county area to apply for our grant, and we give them training so they understand what our grant process is. And of those 255 women who've joined, they are all invited to get involved. And some choose to serve on administrative committees. They might do marketing, or they might help with our events, or you know, they might help us spread the word to invite new members, or they might serve on a focus area committee. the way we give our money away is we have five focus areas. So education, arts and culture, environment and preservation, family, and what am I missing? Education, arts and culture, environment, family, health and wellness. Sorry. So the nonprofits then, they will apply for the grant and they will tell us where they see they fit the most. So, you know, they'll rank those five focus areas and tell us where they fit the most to where they fit the least. The members who want to get involved, they get trained on how to read those grant applications, how to do a site visit, and they will willow away those applications as they come in. And a finance group will come in and review all the numbers to make sure the nonprofits can withstand a grant of, in this case, $127,500. And when they have completed all the focus area teams, have completed their process, they announce their single finalist. Again, in Traverse City, that finalist announcement's coming up at the end of September. But each impact chapter operates on a slightly different calendar based on their membership. And once we have those five finalists, whether you have been actively involved or whether you wrote your check and didn't think another thing about Impact 100, every member gets the same vote. And so you'll get an executive summary where you can learn about these nonprofits and how they'll spend the money. You can vote by absentee ballot, or if you're able, you attend our annual meeting where we hear from these finalists. We listen to their compelling story of why we should vote for them, and then we cast our ballot, and at the end of the evening, we hand out those big checks and start all over again, inviting women to participate.
That's really exciting. How do you stay connected to so many members as you're growing within your community?
You know, that's the tricky part. And it takes all of us. And frankly, it also takes understanding that some women may not want to be all that connected as much as we'd like them to be connected. So we reach out, we keep them informed, we offer opportunities for them to meet the finalists and really see face to face who we're going to be selecting between as we do our votes. And we also get women engaged in whatever level that feels the most comfortable to them. Part of the reason behind a $1,000 entry point, if you will, a $1,000 membership, is that because it's a stop and think gift, women feel connected to writing that check, and therefore they feel really connected to the $100,000 grants that come out at the end of the cycle. And when that happens, you know, for most of us, it's not anywhere in the cards that I could write a check to a nonprofit for $100,000 or more. But through my Impact 100 involvement, I can feel as if I've just written a check for $100,000 or $127,500 in the case of this particular Impact chapter this year. And that is really, really powerful. When you start to feel that way, you want more. I've often described Impact 100 as sort of the introduction or gateway to bigger philanthropy, because for most women, when they start to feel what that looks like, they know they want more, and they know they want their friends and family and neighbors and colleagues to experience what they're experiencing.
Yes, it's a great feeling. And what do you think, if you were to step back, what's been the most rewarding part of building Impact 100 for you?
You know, honestly, for me, to see the success and to meet the people, both the women and the nonprofits, whose lives have been so dramatically changed. You know, the model that we use today to share with organizations, people who want to get started, is the exact same model that I came up with in the summer of 2001, and that it has stood the test of time and continues to be transformational is just amazing to me.
Excellent. Wendy, I'm going to ask you to hold all of your thoughts just for a moment. We're going to take a super quick break, give some love to our sponsor. And I also want to mention that Women Worldwide has joined the C-Suite Radio Network. So now you can find all of our episodes on c-suiteradio.com. And be sure to check out the other great business podcasts while you're there.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communication and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from awareness to action and impact by offering a digital marketing roadmap. Let us help you foster deeper engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with two M's.com.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. Wendy Steele and I were just chatting about her innovative foundation, Impact 100, and women in and philanthropy. Wendy, so you gave us some great information about all the good that you're doing in communities, how women are becoming philanthropists, and the way that they're giving. But let's kind of pivot a little bit and talk about the business side of things, and maybe if you don't mind sharing some of the challenges that you faced as you were building your business.
Oh my gosh. Well, it's a great question. I wish I could tell you that, you know, I don't remember any challenges or they weren't significant enough for me to even talk about, but you know otherwise. You know, so on the business side, on the Generosity Matters side, the tricky part there, the biggest challenges are really around the work itself. And what I mean by that is I have the distinct pleasure of working with amazing nonprofits and families and companies who really want to make a difference. And I end up feeling very, very connected to them. From a business standpoint, I get asked a lot to do pro bono work. And bear in mind that everything I do on the Impact 100 side is pro bono. And so the Generosity Matters side is what actually keeps the lights on and pays right. the bills. Yes. And so, and every time someone, when they make their pitch for why I need to do it pro bono, it's like, I really, really, really understand this. And the tricky part is it's hard for me to say no. And because of that, I end up doing a lot more pro bono than any yes. wise accountant would ever tell me to do. And yet somehow it all sort of comes out in the wash. Like, I just believe that when you do what's right, regardless of how you do it, that it ends up being made up for. So there are times when a small company might be better resourced and they will end up paying me more than I expect. And at the same time, I've given away more than I probably should have. And at the end, it all sort of works out. And I just trust that, you know, I follow my instincts, but it can be a little tenuous at times. Well, challenge is a good word.
No, that's, I can relate to what you're saying, definitely. And those instincts certainly help. But somehow, I don't know, this notion of giving to the universe, and when you really feel strongly about helping, you get back, and sometimes you get back so much bigger. Just like you said, how that small business you wouldn't expect to receive as much as you did, so you just never know.
Exactly.
So, the you know, you are juggling a lot. I mean, we've talked about your company, Impact 100, the Advisory Council, and then you have something I would suspect called a personal life, at least I hope you do. How do you balance or blend your time?
You know, that is a great question. Yes, I am very fortunate to be happily married with a blended family of five children. So it can get difficult, and certainly at different seasons of our lives, it's been more challenging than other times. The difference, I think, in what I'm doing currently is what I do is so much of who I am that some people would say it's, quote, bad, end quote, because there's not a lot of balance. But I really believe that it's good, because whether I'm doing my work or I'm with my family, I'm operating the same way. And it's my personal values and it's how I present myself to the world. So as a result, you know, my family, my husband's very generous. He was generous before he met me. My children, both my biological children and my stepchildren, are also kind, good-hearted, generous people who are quick to help another. And so at the end, I sort of feel like there are very blurred lines. The trickiest part is probably when I'm traveling. And so in that case, that's when the juggle becomes a little more real. But normal day in, day out, how I spend my days, my nights, my weekends, it all feels really similar. And I think when you're happy and fully engaged in the work you do, you're happy and fully engaged when you're home too. I just think they feed each other.
Yeah, it sounds like it's happening naturally. It's not something that you have to force, because as you said, it's who you are and it's your personal values, and you can see how it sort of transcends into your work and your life with your family, blending your family. It works because you like what you do. I think that comes through loud and clear, the passion that I'm hearing. So bravo to you, and bravo for blending a family of five. That's awesome. We have four kids that we blended, and certainly, so congratulations on that. Let's talk a little bit about goals and focus. So what keeps you laser focused and always reaching your goals?
Gosh, so I have to make a confession. We haven't talked about this yet on this call, but I am actually a recovering banker. So when I graduated college, I went right into the financial services field, and I loved every minute of it. By the time I left the industry, I was a senior vice president and regional manager for trust and private banking wealth management for a mid-sized regional bank. And I felt my job at that point was serving people and helping them to reach their goals, whether it was through lending or investments or advice, estate planning, so forth. And so it fit my values and I loved it. But that banker in me still makes sure that the numbers add up, and I had really strong habits. And so I think, like everything else in life, if you are in the habit of continuously learning, you will continuously learn. And if you're in the habit of being focused and setting goals and attaining them, you just do it. And I was that kid growing up. If you told me where the bar was, I made sure that I got over it with some room to spare. And I think that's just kind of in my DNA. And so that's what I do. I also spend a lot of time, and this sounds counterintuitive, but I spend a lot of time in sort of prayer and meditation, making sure that the solutions, whatever they are, the path to get to those goals, are the best possible solutions. They are the ones where everybody wins, because that's the only way I can operate. And so I spend a fair amount of time sort of diagnostically figuring out the best path. And then once I know what that is, it's sort of a logical step of taking one step after the other to get to where I'm going. And of course, readjusting along the way.
So I'm thinking that the meditation helps you to be really centered and present so that you can find that path.
Yes. Well, in theory, yes. And I'd like to tell you that I master that all the time, but that would be a complete and total lie. So I don't always master it, honestly. Sometimes the stress does get the better of me. And when that happens, the people I love the most, my friends and my family, usually get the brunt of a, you know, shorter fuse or more impatient Wendy coming to the table. But they've gotten really good at reminding me that maybe I need a walk or some time alone. So it's not reminders. Exactly. It's not perfect. But I do try really hard to be intentional, and I do try hard to keep that balance. It just doesn't always go that way.
So when it comes to stress, is it, aside from the meditation, and you just mentioned that sometimes your family gets the brunt, even going back to your days as a banker, you know, from there to what you're doing now, I'm sure there's stress. Maybe you could give some more tips on handling stress.
You know, I think part of it is all of us, what I call high capacity women, women who are out there, you know, running on all cylinders and trying to do what we do to make the world a better place. It can be hard for us, if especially as leaders and solution providers, to ever raise our hand and even admit that we have stress or that we need a break or we need to do something for ourselves. So, you know, the very first tip, and this was not a natural thing for me by any means, is the recognition that we've got to speak about it. We've got to say that we have it, and we've got to say it to ourselves. We've got to say it to our loved ones, to our support system. And then we've got to make sure that we deal with it appropriately. And so part of what I do is I try to block time on my calendar that is at the same priority level as any business meeting or any business item that I need to take care of. Is I make sure that I put some personal things on my calendar. And to be honest, right now I'm in the phase of reordering that, because sometimes those little calendar reservations can get fewer and fewer, and then you sure. realize, oh, I can skip it today or I can skip it this week. And you can when you're under a deadline, but you just, at least for myself, you know, you can't operate that way. So you've got to reset. And I'm in a process of resetting at this point to look at my calendar and allow whatever it is that feeds you. So for me, that's often walking outside. It might be getting a massage, very decadent, but that makes a huge difference
in my perspective. Oh, yeah. Once a month for an hour is the best thing in the world.
It really is so amazing. Yeah, mm-hmm. it really helps. And then also having a safe place to just vent, you know, whether that's your CEO roundtable, whether it's your group of gal pals, whether it's book club, whether it's your significant other, you know, you've got to have a place where you can be real. And sometimes real isn't pretty or perfect or well put together. Sometimes real is bumpy and uncomfortable. But it's important, because as soon as you realize that in being real, you've now freed someone else to be real with themselves and with you, it's the ripple effect of even that is so enormous. And so trying to be as authentic as we can keeps the stress at bay, which means when you need a break, you take one. I have lunch with a friend who is a, you know, world-class athlete. And so she eats like a world-class athlete. Needless to say, I do not eat like a world-class athlete, nor am I one. And she will laugh, because when we're together, I'll order a salad, but then I'll make sure that they have bread and butter, and I will eat bread and butter along with my salad.
Good for you, Wendy.
It makes me really happy, and it's
bread makes me happy too. I have to eat bread every day.
So we got to know what our own limitations are, what our own bread is that we need to feed ourselves in order to keep things where, you know, so we're at our most productive, because we're no good to anyone when we go into this high stress mode.
All right. This is a hard question, and I don't know if you can answer it, but I'm going to throw it out anyway. What do you think stops us from being real? You said that we have to be real, but what do you think stops us from being real? Is that like a lack of confidence, or we don't want to let people know we have vulnerabilities? What is it?
You know, I think it's all those things. I think sometimes we don't want to admit it to ourselves. I think that we're afraid that if we admit that we're climbing a particular mountain, that, you know, somehow that might bleed into the other areas of our lives and people might make a rash judgment of our competencies in other areas. If the truth is so different than that, though, the truth is when we're real is the only time that we can actually have real relationships and we can actually do the best work that we have is bringing our real authentic selves into it. I think that partly, you know, as kids, women were sort of seen and not heard, and children were seen and not heard, and keep a stiff upper lip and onward. I think those sort of things have been ingrained in certainly corporate culture, many family cultures. We as women don't want to be seen as weak or emotional because we kind of come to the table already, you know, feeling that we're being judged as more weak or more emotional than our male counterparts. And so we don't like to feed into that myth. What I've learned is that men also feel weak and vulnerable sometimes, and they have a much harder time at admitting their areas of stress and keeping it real for a whole host of different reasons that they deal with. And so, you know, if we view ourselves as leaders, whether we're leading our family, our businesses, our nonprofits, our community, our neighborhood, if we see ourselves as leaders, and then we need to model the right behavior of dealing with stress. And so sometimes the key to getting women to be real is couching it in the way of how can you lead whoever it is you're leading through their own stress if you don't come clean and be honest about your own. You've got to model it and be transparent about the struggles as well as the triumphs if you really want to lead these folks to where they need to go, which is at the top of the mountain. But it's a hard one. It's a really hard one.
It really is, but you just gave excellent advice that if you can't do that for yourself, then how do you model and help others to improve and do the same? I want to tap into your secret of networking, because clearly you've created Impact 100 and you're meeting all of these incredible women and working with them. So are there secrets to networking and connecting with people who share similar interests?
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, it's funny. But I will tell you that networking is, it's kind of a mind game. So when I started Impact 100 and even through today, I had never had any real formal public speaking training. I knew that the only way that I could spread the word about this brand new thing that had not existed before was to get over it and to learn to speak in public. I also learned something really, really valuable, which is if I'm passionate about something like Impact 100, I can't wait to tell you and anyone else about it. But the deal is that it's not going to be for everyone. And so I don't go in with the expectation of, you know, there's a room full of 50 women. I want to talk to 20 of them and I want 15 of them to join Impact 100. It's not a numbers game like that for me. And it's not about what they do with the information. I let go of the outcome. And instead, I think networking is intimidating because our outcome, we're focused on the outcome. I want people to like me, or I want people to buy whatever it is I'm selling, or I want them to join me in Impact, or I want them to fill in the blank. If we let go of the outcome and you say, here's a room of 50 people, I just want to connect with people. I want to find people who are smarter than I am. I want to find people who think like I think. I want to find people who share my interests. And the only way you can do that is to tell your story. And so, and tell it and listen for their stories. Have good questions, like you always do.
Oh,
you know,
thank
have
you.
Good have good questions to allow people to be drawn out and say the truth of who they are. Because when you let go of the outcome, these networking experiences, they're not a chore. They're an opportunity. They're a pleasure. They're a privilege. And I'm not, I think by nature, I'm slightly introverted, actually. I think I'm sort of a balance between introverted and extroverted, I guess. But it's not always comfortable for me. But I know that I don't have a lot of patience for small talk, for talk that isn't meaningful. And so for me, networking goes deep, fast. And most conversations go deep, fast for me, because that's where I like to spend my time. It's not on, you know, how's the weather and, you know, what do you think about kale? And, you know, it's not, that's really not the space that I live. The space that I live is that deep, authentic, what's hard about blending families, or what's your biggest challenge or your biggest opportunity, or what's the next mountain you're going to climb. And when you go into it that way, that's how people respond to you. And it ends up being fabulous. I've met terrific friends through what most would call sort of networking experiences.
Yes. And then they go deeper too. I love your perspective. I think it's really awesome about networking.
Oh, Wendy, thank you.
Another question to make you think.
You have hard. Every one of these are hard questions.
Here we go. Here's another one. If you were to go back 10 years or even longer, what advice would you give to your younger self?
Oh my gosh. You know, probably a lot of what we're talking about right now.
Right.
So I was that insecure kid. If we go back way longer than 10 years, I was that insecure kid who tried to please everybody. You know, I got good grades and I was a helper around the house, and because I was trying to please, to fit in, to be where I wanted to be. And I really thought at some very early ages that the best way to please was to be what people wanted me to be. And that was okay when the only people I worried about was my math teacher or, you know, my father.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, you know, life gets bigger and life gets more full. And now there are many more people. And it's like, how do you possibly manage that? And so I probably, and I probably still do, but I took myself really seriously. Everything was vitally important. I wasn't really very good at figuring out what's really important versus what's not. Everything was important. And over-prioritizing is a little bit like the boy who cried wolf. If everything is important and everything is urgent, your system is just going and going and going. And I would also say that I handled stress by pushing it down, by just powering through it. And I was not very good at admitting, you know, I was in corporate America during my banking and I loved it. And I was, you know, I have nothing but very good feelings about all of that. But in corporate America, you sort of, you know, chin up, chest out and keep going. You don't, it's not really a place for better stress management. At least it wasn't back in those days. I think it's probably much better now. And so the reinforcement of, you know, you just pretend it isn't real and you keep going. And, you know, that concept of fake it till you make it, you know, that was longer ago than 10 years, but it was a pretty real phenomenon that I had to retrain my brain and my heart to realize that that doesn't, it not only doesn't serve me well, but it doesn't serve my relationships well. It doesn't serve my work well. And so a lot of what we've talked about networking and managing stress and facing, admitting stress, those are from the heart lessons that I needed to learn myself, that my younger self didn't really fully understand or appreciate.
Well, you have certainly given so much advice today. Wendy, where can people find out more about you and your work?
Oh my gosh, thank you for asking. So I'm very easy to find on social media at Wendy Steele, but also generosity-matters.com is my website, or Impact100Council.org. Those are the two websites that are the easiest to reach me.
Excellent. Wendy, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show and share your journey and all of your insights and great advice. We really appreciate everything you've shared today.
Oh my gosh, Deirdre, thank you so much. This has been entirely my pleasure. I'm very grateful for the opportunity, and I hope it's the first of many dialogues. You are an inspiration, so thank you.
Well, thank you. So are you, and I can't wait to keep the conversation going.
Awesome.
And I also want to thank everyone for tuning into Women Worldwide. And until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.